This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, hanging out here. And our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Courtner. Our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw. Now, thank you, young bloods. It is time to get together in the year 2011. Well, we got rules and regulations on 21st Century Radio, and it's time for you to sit up straight. No talking, eyes straight ahead, and you can still chew gum. That's all right. We allow it. But human beings are not machines. We have an immortal component, which is wiser than anything you know. Two, we're not alone in the universe. We never have been. We live with invisible beings inside and outside our physical bodies. And what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. And, of course, by now, you know what we've done to planet Earth. I especially wanted to read these rules and regulations at the opening of tonight's show because we're going to be spending the next 2 hours talking about a religious tradition that is quite foreign to many of you. And before we begin, I want to remind you all that the law of the land in America is the Constitution. And Amendment Number 1 is freedom of religion, speech, and the press. And it reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, our longtime listeners are familiar with me railing against religious fundamentalism in this country, as it routinely reasserts itself into the political structures of man around the world. The need for constant vigilance against its attempt to control our freedom of choice is as pressing today as it ever was. Thomas Jefferson, for all his faults, was the visionary of the American Revolution. His definitive writings lifted us out of the status quo and allowed us to dream of a truly new way of life that centered more than most anything else on the freedom of religion. Now, these beliefs are expressed in his Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, passed in 1786, and excerpted on one wall of his memorial. It says in part, whereas Almighty God hath created the mind free, that no man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship or ministry, or shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinions in matters of religion. Now, horrifyingly today, there are fundamentalist politicians and priests who are trying to rework our sacred stories in order to maintain that America is designed or was designed as a Christian nation, and that all other religions are not only unwelcome, but somehow dangerous. Well, the majority of our founding fathers weren't even Christian. They were deists who saw the existence of God everywhere in nature. America was founded as a democratic republic, and freedom of religious belief is written right into our codes and laws. The fundamentalist politicians and priests of today are not interested in a democratic republic. They would prefer a theocracy. Like George Orwell's Ministry of Truth, they are trying to rewrite our history and refashion our fathers' and founding fathers' ideas so as to make them fit to support a theocracy. Now, the ironic point here is that the most vocal cheerleaders of well, are for rewriting history and calling America a Christian nation are also those who claim to worship the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. Now, the very document that confirms freedom of religious choice, they ignore. These people remind me of the old Tories who opposed the American Revolution and fought instead to maintain a monocracy with its subsequent rule governed by the church. The turning point wrought by Jefferson and other visionaries and warriors of the American Revolution was for humanity to stand up against this monarchical and church power and say, no more. No more would we submit to the fundamentalism of the church that would put to death, oftentimes brutally, those who did not believe and worship in the same way. Millions of practitioners of traditional and ancient beliefs, most of them women, were executed in the centuries leading up to this point, as the Christian church gradually took over political control over all the power in Europe and eventually throughout the far-off colonies. Now tonight, we're going to introduce you to Yoruba, one of the eight religions that run the world according to the title of a current bestseller. Yoruba's spirituality is practiced by over 100 million people around the world today, and I'll bet most of our listeners right now know little or nothing about it, unless they are among the proud descendants of slaves or from Central or South America. We're very fortunate tonight to have our introduction to this nature-based way of life, an ancient cosmology explained to us by an ordained priestess of the and Yoruba chief, Her Excellency Oloi Aina Olamo. Mother Olamo is a Yoruba chief with more than 30 years practicing Yoruba spiritual traditions. Her Grace is a priestess consecrated to the Yoruba divinity Sango, the ancestral society, and the ordained interfaith minister. She describes herself as a spiritual activist, a new African and indigenous Yoruba of the Western Hemisphere. Her viewpoint is a compilation and evolutionary result of her experiences as part of the African diaspora. She is committed to social change, empowering the divinity of the individual, interfaith sharing, and the spiritual advancement of the Yoruba theological concepts. Chief Olamo has published several essays in addition to her award-winning book, Core of Fire, A Path to Yoruba Spiritual Activism. She is an instructor, lecturer, and convener of workshops and seminars. Welcome back to welcome for the first time to 21st Century Radio, Chief Aina Olamo.
Good evening.
Well, good evening to you.
Thank you for having me, Bob.
What'd you say, dear?
I said thank you for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. In the preface of your book, Core of Fire, Dr. Joni L. Jones states that Yoruba is not a solitary practice. It requires a community of practitioners. How and why is this done?
Well, it originated in a tribal, if you will, setting of a compilation of various clans and people who shared a common ethnic group of beliefs, values. And so when we came to the New World and the way our rituals are structured, we need to practice still within that type of context.
And in regards to the community of practitioners, does this allow for a better relationship?
Oh, absolutely. It is the practice of a group that creates stability in a cultural context, yes. Social stability. Mm-hmm. We have rites of passage for children, which acknowledges their movement in our society from one phase of life to another. We have elders who are valued, and they participate from their vantage point as seniors in a given community. And so we have something for everyone, if you will, mm-hmm. and everyone continues to participate and contribute in a community setting.
Well, when and where did you begin your search for African spirituality?
Well, I began my search as a youngster growing up in my early 20s. In the 60s, we were looking for black awareness, if that's what we called it at that time. And in my search for a spirituality that reflected my own reality, I found Yoruba spirituality.
Why'd you find the search so necessary?
Because it's easier to look upon a deity that looks like oneself, just as Asians have Buddha and Caucasians have images of the Christ. I was in search of a image or a symbol that reflected what I looked like, mm-hmm. what my mother looked like, what the people in my community looked like. So it's no different mm-hmm. from other traditions or other ethnic groups.
Well, of course not. That's right, yeah. You know, what are the elements that make up your core belief system, abbreviated CBS? I like that abbreviation. And please explain what you mean by this concept of core belief system.
Okay, core belief system is a set of values and ethics and spiritual laws that one is taught that makes up their foundation. And because in the United States of America, we come from primarily a Judeo-Christian background, most of our beliefs, regardless to whether you're Catholic, you practice Judaism or you're Muslim, your society is based on the core belief systems of the Judeo-Christian standard. And so when you absorb that in many ways, you absorb that in your comings and goings, you absorb that in your money, what your money looks like, all the symbols on your money, your school holidays, your devotion to your flag and country. All of these things are communicated to us from society, and hence they develop as a core belief system. Your work ethic, all of that comes to you through a host of ways, and it really doesn't depend totally on what your spiritual persuasion is,
mm-hmm.
because you're fed by the society.
Well, everyone likes to dress up, and especially being myself, I like to dress up every now and then. But why is changing your way of dressing, eating, and praying, which you refer to as the intellectual phase of rediscovering, not enough?
Well, because you have to undo some of the value systems that you have absorbed from the larger society. So once you support yourself by dressing, eating, and praying in your newly adopted belief system, then you go on to reallocate your values, reallocate your morals, reallocate how your family is structured. You begin to change on a much deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you note that the true essence of our spirituality is revealed not in our day-to-day behaviors, but is in our internal dialect. I think this is a most important point. What is our internal dialect?
Well, Jung covered it very well in terms of your dream symbology and the symbols in an intellect, your conscious mind, as it communicates with your subconscious. And so it forms a language, those symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very important that those symbols also change with you as you change your core belief system.
Yeah, sure. You know, most people think their dreams are relatively unimportant, maybe something that they didn't eat correctly or whatever. But dream time to many ancient cultures is very important. Why is it important to the Yoruba tradition?
It's important even without a spiritual context because it talks about the psychological health of an individual. So you don't necessarily have to be religious to want to delve into your dream symbology and the meaning of it. And what does a house mean to you? What does a car mean? What are the symbology that you've structured, which is the language that your subconscious uses to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to understand the deeper meanings of self.
Yes.
And that dialogue that happens between the conscious and the subconscious.
Well, we're going to take our first break right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about, I learned so much from your book. I really appreciated your taking the time to put all of this together. You know, when we get back, let's talk a little bit about ancestral veneration. Now, this is phenomenal. I'm glad that you explained it so well within your work. We'll return to that when we get back. Of course, we're talking about the book, The Core of Fire, A Path to Yoruba Spiritual Activism, published by Athelia Henrietta Press, on the web at Aina Olamo. Now, I'll spell that. I'll spell it one time here. AINAOLOMO.com. And, of course, you can also find it on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com.
This is Rianne Eisler. I'm the author of The Chalice of the Blade, The Real Wealth of Nations, and other books, and president of the Center for Partnership Studies. And I've just done an interview with Dr. Bob Hieronymus for 21st Century Radio, and I've really enjoyed it. So I encourage you to listen. And I also encourage you to go to our website, partnershipway.org.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Chief Aina Olamo, The Core of Fire, A Path to Yoruba Spiritual Activism, published by Athelia Henrietta Press, or on the web at ainaolamo.com, and you can find it on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com. Chief Aina, please describe ancestral veneration and how it is the foundation and core of all Yoruba-derived spirituality.
Well, as a human being, you are a compilation of all the genetic codes in your blood. And on a cultural level, you are the sum total of everything that your lineage has gone through, learned, and internalized on their cultural journey. Psychologically, you are the compilation of everything your mother tells you, your father tells you, your neighbor, your school tells you. So ancestry, given that it is a historical analysis of how you got to be here, it is the foundation of everything that you are at any given moment in time. What your job is as an individual is to add to that compilation. So your experiences as an individual then join the collective information and you add. It's a continual process. And so for us as Africans in the New World, it's very important and critical for us to reach behind us to get the wisdoms that were stored not only in the last 500 years in the Western Hemisphere, but also those wisdoms that were stored in primordial times and coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that allowed us to endure slavery and the Maya, which is the journey that was made across the Atlantic Ocean. Also, what is that elusive element that allowed us to endure that? What allowed Africa to endure long periods of colonization and oppression. And so that information that is stored becomes the foundation that will also propel us forward to endure whatever else the world has coming toward us.
So that when our ancestors or moms and dads and are going well beyond that, they're always with us still here and as we are in our physical body helping us, guiding us?
Yes, they are. We have access to that collective wisdom at all times.
I think that is so important.
Some of the ways, going to what we covered earlier, is the dream time. Some of the ways that we access some of that information is that it comes to us in dreams, in symbols, dreams of grandma, dreams of grandpa, Uncle Harry, reliving certain things from childhood that imprinted certain rules and ethical values on a youngster. So this information is still accessible, not only spiritually in the from the invisible realm, but also within our DNA. When they say you are prone to diabetes, you are prone to cervical cancer, that information is a compilation of what you are genetically, ancestrally, what you inherited from your ancestors. And psychologically now, you are also a product of everything that has happened in the past. So it becomes a very strong foundation.
So this, but to those who are raised in monotheistic belief systems, why is this concept particularly hard for them to understand?
Well, because it's focused primarily on the individual. It's very individual-based, as opposed to indigenous cultures that are based on the collective.
Mm-hmm.
You are, therefore I am, is more of an indigenous philosophy as opposed to me, my, I.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, nature is very important to the Yoruba traditions, and you note that the ancestors taught you how to synchronize your heartbeat with the pulse of the earth. Of what importance was this, and how did you accomplish that synchronization?
Well, we accomplished it the same way other indigenous groups did, by listening to the earth, by listening to our heart, by mimicking those sounds with drums, with rattles, with whistles, with the blowing of a conch shell, with the clapping of hands, with the thumping of a footstep through the forest. This understanding is not peculiar to Yoruba people. It's a way of living for most indigenous people who are tied in any way to the land and agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's one of the reasons why I guess many of those who founded this country had such a difficult time in understanding the Native Americans.
Yes.
Who were so close to nature, we just did not understand them. Some of our founding fathers did, obviously, because
yes.
Especially the League of the Iroquois and the Cherokee, contributed a great deal to the founding of our nation. Whereas, and that's old research, which right now, in the last 20 years, is now being more and more accepted. I was surprised that even President Bush, the first President Bush, accepted that.
Yes.
I wish many other Republicans would have paid attention to that, but unfortunately they didn't. Now, there is a supreme being in the Yoruba tradition. How is it referred to, and what is its purpose?
Well, it doesn't have a purpose. It exists because it decided to exist. It is the divinity that has no parents, which would be a literal translation of what we commonly refer to as Olodumare. It's the one without parents. It exists. It's a force in the universe. It's the supreme being that everything else emanates from, and everything in the universe has an aspect of it in its own being.
So Olodumare, or the It, or Infinite Mystery, is it male or female?
It's not a human, Bob. It doesn't have gender or biology.
Mm-hmm.
It's an energetic force, a field. It's not a human.
Of course. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure our listeners were aware of that.
Yes, it's the source of everything. It's from that energy field that everything else comes into existence.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Orishas, who or what are they, and could you name and describe a few of them for us?
Yes, I can. There's two levels of Orisha, and one of those is the Irumole, and the Irumole are forces of nature that manage the earth and the ecological system that we live on that ultimately controls the planet. Then we have the Orisha, which can also be a force of nature or an Igumale that has decided to incarnate in a human or physical form.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those Irumale that now incarnate in human form would be Yemanja, which is the top layer of the sea, the point where the waves break, with my own divinity, Shango, which is thunder, lightning, and sound. He incarnated as a human being with the river, which is, of course, water was very early in the formation of the planet. And so we have Oloku, who is the depth of the sea, which can also incarnate as a human. The river, Oshun, which is part of our freshwater system, also incarnates in human form. And Obatala would incarnate as the mountain range in nature, and would also incarnate in human form as Ebola.
Well, in regards to the Orishas, they are not benevolent guardian angels whose job it is to protect us. Is that true?
Well, that's true in a lot of ways. Let me preface this by saying it's very important to understand that when they incarnate as human beings, the very word Orisha, when we translate it, it means heads or have been selected for worship. And those Orisha as human beings are archetypes that have been isolated and designated as forces and personalities that we need to propel us forward and handle certain types of things in our society.
And that is their job.
Yes.
That's
if you understand that it's a force of nature, mm-hmm. Let's use the sea for an example. The sea, while it does provide caring and nurturing for the planet, if you cannot swim and you get into the sea, you will drown. So it doesn't matter whether you are a good person or a bad person. What becomes important is your endurance and whether or not you can swim. Mm-hmm. So the deity, the divine consciousness of the sea, is not necessarily going to spare you just because you are a nice person. It has its own consciousness, and it is designed by its own matrix to do what its purpose is. So while it does care for us in a larger sense, it produces about 70% of the air we breathe. It, however, is not dependent on me as whether or not I'm a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a force that's just going to coddle me, love me. The divinity, Irumale, are killing forces. I mean, the sea itself is the largest cemetery on the planet, okay?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
sure.
If you have a tsunami, which we have seen, when it exceeds its boundaries, it is not necessarily a saint-like divinity. It's nature.
Mm-hmm. So, believe it or not, there are talk show hosts today that actually say some things like the reason why Japan is suffering right now is because they were so much supportive of our cult of nature I really find this offensive because it is one of the ways by which certain talk show hosts can always put down individuals. Some are even saying more or less like Katrina, where Katrina struck was because the places that it struck, and that these are actual talk show hosts,
mm-hmm.
have said things like, well, they deserved it. They this is pathetic. To me, it is very pathetic to hear this kind of talk from individuals that really are mature enough, certainly multimillionaires, these are, from saying these kind of things. And I hear it all.
Well, one of the problems I think with that is the human ego. To think for man, to think that they are the ultimate in importance on this planet is part of our problem as creatures.
Yeah.
We are only a speck of sand on a beach, each of us as individuals. And it's the idea that humanity is the reason why the planet exists that has caused us to abuse it and to not pay attention to nature and to try to live in harmony with it. I don't personally believe that humanity is all that important in terms of the life of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Well, the planet,
we're just one more creature.
Yeah, the planet's going to go on without us. So, I mean, it's
it existed before us.
Yes,
why wouldn't it go on?
Of course, of course.
Now, so we're not critical to the planet's existence.
But our many people's egos think that that we are.
Well, you know, that can come about because, from my personal point of view, man created God in his image.
Oh, yes.
And so if you consider yourself psychologically to be a God, in quotes, and your God is very human, then you use a very humanitarian way of looking at God according to what your problems are, what your perspective is, and what's important to you. But when you take the gender out of God and you understand that the creation is a source of power and energy and not a human being, and you remove yourself out of the equation, then you really get in alignment with the idea that we're only one mammal among many. We're only one creature among many. We're only one planet among many. And so you diminish the importance of the human and get put it into a more realistic context.
Yes. We're going to take our final break of this hour with Chief Ayina Olamo, The Core of Fire, A Path to Yoruba, that is a spiritual activism, published by Athelia Henrietta Press. On the web is ayinaolamo.com. And, of course, you can also go to the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com, and there she is.
With Band of Gypsies and the Jimi Hendrix Experience, you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, yes, indeed. Billy, look forward to getting together with you again. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Chief Ayina Olamo, The Core of Fire, A Path to the Yoruba Active Spiritual Activism, published by Athelia Henrietta Press, on the web at ayinaolamo.com. And you can find that also on the front page at 21stCenturyRadio.com. I may mispronounce this, and I'm sorry if I do, but what are the Ayimi? Is it?
Excuse me. Iyami.
Oh, Iyami. Oh, Iyami. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. It translated, it means my mother. And we refer to her as the Great Mother. It describes the functions of mother as an archetype as well as a divinity, mm-hmm. and places her at the center of universal knowing. Female in function and not necessarily female as human,
mm-hmm.
okay? So that it gathers, stores, and has the ability to reproduce and much like a physical vagina or birthing system, mm-hmm. and to hold a womb that can hold things. It's demonstrated throughout this cosmos. We have the black hole, which functions much in the same way as a woman's birth canal.
Yes, yes, of course. Yeah. Well, you know, with our project on the Statue of Liberty, we're particularly uh-huh. interested in the Orisha called Yemanya?
Yemanya, yes.
Yeah, Yemanya.
Yes.
Could you please talk to her a little bit of it for us, because I'm very impressed by the one drawing I've seen of her.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Yemanja in nature originally was a deity that was identified as being a divine consciousness of the Ogun River, which is located in what we now call Nigeria. When the slave began, she followed the slaves in the sea, and she didn't let them leave without her. As a mother figure would, she followed the slave ship. They had apparitions and other spiritual visions as they were making that journey across. And so when she reached the New World, when we reached Western Hemisphere, we then knew Yemanja to be a divinity of the sea and no longer a divinity of just the river.
So that then she becomes not just fresh water, but salt water.
Yes.
Isn't that something? That's fascinating symbolism there. How and when did the Yoruba spirituality come to the Western world? And using Yemanja as an example, tell us how it was changed by the Christianizing of the slaves.
Okay, Yemanja was not Christianized, but syncretized. The sea, in other words, we didn't bring the sea and the mermaids and the sibyls and the sirens into the physical church. The sea, because it is a natural body, is too large to come inside the church. But what they did was they took the symbolism and combined it with those symbols of the Virgin Mary that were also compatible with what they brought as wisdoms from the continent about Yemanja. One of the most common symbols of the Catholic Church, which became a mask that Yemanja wore early in our slavery, was the Virgin of Regla, R-E-G-L-A. And she has a long history of devotion within the Catholic Church, going as far back as the 14th century in Spain. Folk histories claim that she had a more distant origin in certain parts of Africa and early Christian life as far as in Egypt as well. According to one legend of the church, St. Augustine commissioned the image, the statuary of Regla, sometime during the 4th or 5th century for his order. When the church faced attacks by Eastern Germanic invasions in the 5th century, Augustine's followers fled to the sea, and they took this statue with them. And this was the first transoceanic journey that marked Yemanja as a patroness of overseas travelers.
Yes.
Then later on, the Moors, when they invaded Spain, the Virgin was sequestered in a cave in the countryside, where the devotees continued to honor her at a secret shrine. 700 years later, the Virgin was also found again by an Augustinian monk whom she had revealed herself and her location in a dream. The church was also near the sea, and consequently, they erected another shrine towards her. She was once again associated with the sea. In 1643 in Santa Cruz, one of the several cities in the Canary Islands, slave ships stopped for provisions on the way to the Caribbean, and they say that they saw many mermaids and so forth in the sea guarding the slave ships. This virgin statue was brought to Cuba by a Spanish colonial in the 17th century who had made a promise this statue and divinity of the Virgin Mary to pay her appropriate homage if she would guide him safely to the shore. And in fulfillment to this promise, her statue was established in 1690, and she became the patroness of a town, small town called Regla in Cuba. And so what the slaves did was look at various saints that had life documented occurrences that were easily transferable in symbology. So because Yemanja or Virgin Rela, this attribute of the Virgin Mary, had long been associated with the sea and sailors and caves and secrets and dreams, it was very easily to take the African understanding of Yemanja and put on the mask of Mary, the Virgin of Rela.
Well, we have another number of Mother Marys in my studio tonight, maybe seven or eight. Blue and white is the emphasis on most Virgin Marys that I've seen. So Yemanja really certainly has influenced here. It really is something. Again, these are things that...
colors, too, by the way, blue and white.
Yes, indeed, and for good reason, too. Water water seems to be enormously important to everything. How does a monotheistic background and a person's core belief system impede spiritual progress in Yoruba?
Well, it impedes our progress in the New World because we have to work through our Judeo-Christian background to go into our original culture as perceived and documented in our sacred texts within the Yoruba tribal system of clans. The monotheism is not expansive enough to honor the diversity and exchange that happens in an African belief system between the creation and its creatures. A monotheism as such does not honor the complexity of the spirit journey. Monotheism uses only a patriarchal lens in most cases, a male system, a male view to make determinations concerning the values and ethics of humans. For instance, you have Islam. Islam is monotheistic. It focuses on a very benevolent male-like divinity, Allah. And also within Christianity, you have God the Father, then you have God the Son, and then you have God the Holy Ghost. It's devoid of any hint of female energy, although we have in nature the necessity of the feminine function in terms of we have to have women to have children. Without them, there would be no people. We have to have cross-pollination in plant life. We have to have a father, son, and mother earth in order to sustain life. So it's much more of a balanced view of the complexity of how humanity interacts within this ecosystem.
Today, within the Western culture, we have a great imbalance.
Yes.
We have great imbalance. There is certainly the male seems to be the dominant force, and andocracy, which basically is all about patriarchy. It is amazing to me how so many males can look at this and believe that this is a balanced tradition. It reeks of imbalance.
That's true, particularly when we look at the depictions of the female and the simplicity of and unity of opposites. You're either a saint or a sinner. Mm-hmm. You're either a whore or a virgin. You're either right or wrong. You're either going to heaven or hell. And so the diversity and the gray tones of human life are not really acknowledged in depth in the theology.
Well, if it's not consciously acknowledged, then unconsciously it even causes greater confusion, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's open for interpretation.
Because
yes.
it would lack the feeling of truth. It would lack the feeling of the oneness of all things. Well, that's my bias. I'm sorry. I'm bringing my bias in here on this. But it's, I think, a very serious problem because it seems to me that the Western world may be forever going to be going to war under those kind of circumstances. And that's why I believe it is so important for the indigenous nations and the native traditions come more into focus in this country, to at least soften that view and give us a deeper understanding of the balance that's needed between males and females, because we, within our own genetic structure, are some degree female and male at the same time. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, well, at least I got something right here, huh? So,
the mind that is led by nature finds it easier to expand the perimeters of its conscious and unconscious self, because it doesn't have to contend with black or white, up or down, right or wrong. It allows more for expression. It allows more for spontaneity given a certain situation. It allows for the human experience of being human, you know?
Yes, of course. Yes, I think that's one of the most important aspects of it. Oops, we're about out of time for this hour, but we have an entire other hour with our guest, Chief Aina Olumo. We're talking, much of this information can be found in the book, which I enjoyed from page to page. I'm holding it up to the microphone so that all of you folks can see that every page has been almost destroyed by my taking notes. I got to learn. This is the best way I have to learn, by reading and writing and doing my arithmetic at times. We'll be back with our guest, Chief Aina Olumo, The Core of Fire, A Path to the Yoruba Tradition, Yoruba Spiritual Activism, published by Athelia Henrietta Press, on the web, ainaolumo.com, or find it on the front page at 21stCenturyRadio.com.
Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore, and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel.